Chapter 26. Joey felt jittery. He was finding it nerve-wracking to sit still at his desk for 8 hours each day. He kept telling himself all was going well. For over 2 weeks he'd been taking every check that came in and helping himself to generous amounts from most of the accounts Evans's ran. Nobody appeared to have noticed. No questions were being asked. His fellow clerks had commented that their work was reduced, but they seemed to be in no hurry to bring it to Mr. Draper's attention. Joey told himself he was uneasy because Lizzie had left him. She was on his mind when he should have been thinking of other things. He had even greater reason to get even with the Mortimers now. Thursday came. It seemed an ordinary day. He'd been sitting at his desk working on the wage packets for half an hour when the news came that Sir Hugo Mortimer had been taken ill during the night and had died in hospital. Everybody knew Sir Hugo was Greg Mortimer's grandfather, and they stopped work to whisper. Joey felt a bow wave of speculation go round the office about how much Greg would inherit now. Joey tried to think through what it would mean for his plan. Greg wouldn't be coming to the office for the next few days, that was certain, and all to the good. Bereavement would surely take his mind off the affairs of A.A. Evans, and that was even better. And the wages would still have to be paid. He decided it was another bonus for him. He tried to reckon up how much he'd taken so far, and it ran into thousands. He'd had a good run of luck to get away with it this far, and it looked as though his luck was holding. On the following Tuesday, it came as something of a shock to find both Greg and Matthew Mortimer in the office and holding conferences behind closed doors. Gleason was called in. Everybody looked serious and shocked. He told himself Hugo Mortimer's death was the cause, but the atmosphere in the office seemed tense. His fellow clerks were edgy, too. It took all his nerve to stay at his desk. 8 more working days to get through before he could go off on holiday. His nails were bitten down to the quick. Nick sat at his office desk, staring into space. He still hadn't recovered from the funeral. Hugo's death had come as a shock. He'd gone to the church, as had many others from Evans's, and had not been able to find a seat. Many had not even been able to get inside. He'd tried to go to the graveside, but it had proved impossible in the crush. He shivered. Lizzie had looked so forlorn in black. He hadn't been able to get near her, and she hadn't even noticed he was there. He'd wanted to offer her comfort, but he hadn't seen her since. There was no phone at his lodgings, and he hadn't wanted to intrude on the family last night. He decided he'd ring her in his lunch hour today. It had pleased him this morning to open his newspaper and see her in a photograph captioned, "Mortimer Family's Grief." A row of women in mourning, and there she was, between Hannah and Dorothy, where she belonged. He shuffled through the papers on his desk, feeling somehow less secure. Hugo had offered him help and encouragement. Recently Nick had seen quite a lot of him at Oak Ridge. He'd miss him, too. He felt in his pocket and took out the letter Edmund Stanton had sent him, headed, "Capital Farms Limited." It was no good denying it. This was exactly the job he wanted. He'd have jumped at this chance if it hadn't been for Lizzie. He could just afford to keep a wife on what Evans has paid him. Anything less would mean putting off the wedding for a time. He looked round him at clerks writing in ledgers. 2 rows in front, Joey O'Malley was biting the end of his pen and wasting time, too. Nick sighed. More than anything else, he wanted Lizzie. He could put up with this if he had her. He saw Matthew Mortimer stride up the hall towards his office. He looked bleak and withdrawn, his mouth in a straight line. Greg followed him in a few minutes later, looking totally bereft, even ill, and slammed into his own office. Greg had said he'd see Nick to discuss the problems he'd thought were caused by fraud. In the intervening days he'd become more certain he was right, and it was continuing. He had the evidence ready in a neat pile on the edge of his desk. It seemed a good moment. He was on his feet, ready to go up, when he saw Matthew Mortimer go into Greg's office. Edmund Stanton's letter caught Nick's attention again. He was very tempted, but he'd be expected to move about the country. They had a lot of arable land in Essex. He didn't think he could bear to leave Lizzie once they were married. The prospect of that made him hot with anticipation. An hour went by, and Greg seemed busier than usual. His father was with him, and senior managers were going in and out. Nick decided he had to tell him what was on his mind, and went up to the desk in the alcove to talk to Miss Peacock. Her grey dress was as drab as ever, but today she had a patch of crimson on each cheek. She seemed harassed, with piles of correspondence on her desk, and said quickly, "I don't think he'll have time for you today. With his father here, he has more important things to think about." Nick felt a rush of impotent rage. "For him, nothing can be more important than this. I tried to tell him about it last week. It's now urgent. It's his problem, and he's got to know about it. Ask him when I can see him, and it won't wait till tomorrow." When he turned round, Matthew Mortimer had come into the alcove and was standing behind him with a face like thunder.
"You'd better come in now," he said, tight-lipped. "It's Nick Bender, isn't it?"
Lizzie felt quite flurried when Matt telephoned to say he and Greg were coming home for lunch because there was something they wanted to thrash out in private. It didn't please her. Matt had a way of looking at her as though she wasn't welcome in his house, and she felt Hannah needed peace out of a shock she'd suffered. Lizzie went out to the garden to let Hannah know, and found her sitting quietly in a leafy corner well away from the house, reading a letter. She looked so tranquil, and Lizzie didn't like disturbing her. But Hannah stood up immediately and walked back to the house in her usual unflurried way. She went to the kitchen. "We'd better have the chops we were going to have for dinner tonight," she told her cook. "They'll be here in half an hour. Doesn't give us much time to arrange anything else. We can think again about dinner this afternoon." Hannah pushed her dark hair off her forehead and went to spread the cloth on the dining room table. It pleased Lizzie to find she was getting over her shock so quickly. There was a calmness about her, as though she was accepting Hugo's death. When she heard the front door slam and heavy footsteps in the hall, Lizzie was feeding Piers his lunch in the garden. Nancy was with her, feeding Paul. "What's the matter, Matt?" she heard Hannah ask. It was a warm day, and the French doors to the sitting room were open behind her.
"It's the business. In deep trouble. We may not be able to save it."
"Greg, it can't be that bad," Hannah's shocked voice asked.
"It's no good asking him. It's Greg's fault. He's not been giving it his attention. Too busy gadding off to race meetings."
In the silence that followed, Hannah's voice carried clearly.
"Yours too, Matt. You're never here. It's your business. You should have looked after it." "I didn't want it in the first place." Matt sounded angry. "My interests lie elsewhere. Greg wanted to be a businessman and was so sure he knew what he was doing."
Lizzie heard them go into the dining room and shuddered. Nancy's eyes were like saucers. Clearly she'd heard that too. Hannah came to the French doors. "Lizzie, lunch is ready." "I could have mine in the kitchen with Nancy. You'll want to talk business." "No," she said. "There's no reason why you shouldn't be with us." At the door, Lizzie met Matt's cold, questioning glance.
"Hannah?"
He seemed affronted. She said firmly, "Lizzie is family, and she lives here." Matt's lips straightened into a harder line. Greg seemed angry and even more hostile. Lizzie wasn't hungry, but she sat down. They all started on the soup in silence. The chops had come in before Matt spoke.
"I think you'd better try and sell the business," he said, addressing Greg coldly. "If not, close it." "Close it? Don't be silly, Dad." Greg was highly indignant. "I don't understand what you've been doing. If my father could run a dozen businesses at once and make each earn its way, I can't understand why you failed to manage one."
"Grandpa didn't involve himself," Greg blustered. "Hardly went near them. He had a knack of keeping managers on their toes."
"Pity he didn't keep you on your toes. You've run Evans as straight into the ground. There isn't much of value to sell."
Angrily, Matt dabbed at his mouth with his napkin.
"There's been no new investment for 20 years. The buildings are old and the machinery out of date. We've been making the same old toffee for 100 years. Tastes change.
We should have branched out into boiled sweets or even chocolate. You made no effort to extend the range. We have too many employees doing too little. You've made no attempt to maintain efficiency. Dad, you ran it yourself for 20 years and did none of those things. It's no good blaming me. What I do blame you for is helping yourself to company money. You know damn well it wasn't your personal property. I thought of it as a loan. I was going to replace it. I meant to. No doubt when one of your horses came up. You've no judgment, Greg. You can't even pick a good horse. Taking company funds for yourself. Have you no sense? It's a criminal matter. For God's sake, Father, you're not... Of course not. We can't have that sort of publicity. But Evans is short of cash, and that makes everything more difficult.
I'm quite willing to help, Matt, Hannah said softly. He swung on her abruptly.
Better not. Too many other problems. There could be fraud, too. Your Nick Bender reckons there is.
Lizzie went cold and then hot. Nick must have told them about Joey. She wished he had not, but Nick would see it as his duty. It made her feel more guilty. Nick wouldn't have seen that van if she hadn't taken him home.
It's not all my fault. Be fair, Father, if there's fraud as well. You didn't notice. How could you be expected to? You were always away at the races.
Nobody else noticed either.
What you did hid what was happening from the rest of the staff. Did anybody question what you took?
Lizzie swallowed at the wrong moment and almost choked on a piece of potato. She knew she was drawing everybody's attention by coughing. It had to be Joey. Hadn't he vowed he'd do it?
I certainly blame you for not seeing it sooner. You wouldn't even listen when Bender tried to tell you.
Don't you know who's doing it? Hannah asked.
Greg knows nothing. We'll need to sift through everything to find out exactly what's missing. We aren't sure about anything yet.
Lizzie froze in panic. Joey would be caught. Hadn't she feared this all along?
We'll catch the culprit, Greg said easily. Even that might not save Evans's, with Father leaving me nothing. Fortunately, you'll be all right, Hannah. I'm afraid I might be bankrupted. This house might have to go. At least you can afford to put another roof over our heads.
It can't be that bad, she breathed.
What about me? Greg demanded. I'll lose my job and have nothing. You have your own money. Father gave you enough to set yourself up.
But I didn't. He wanted me to help you at Evans's. If only Grandpa were still alive, he could have bailed us out.
If he'd wanted to. All that money wasted on charities, a fraction of it would be all we'd need.
Matt sighed.
Start sacking staff. There's far too many of them sitting round all day. Can't afford their wages any longer. But quietly. We don't want all this to come out. Employees will panic if they think we can't pay their wages, and if there's any publicity, the business will be harder to sell.
Nobody was even pretending to eat now. The chops had hardly been touched.
Clogs to clogs in 3 generations. Isn't that what they say? Matt asked, sitting up straight in his chair. We Mortimers are running true to form.
Lizzie didn't know what to do with herself.
The whole thing's a shambles, he went on. I wish I could go back to Crete.
There you go again, Greg's voice grated with indignation, leaving all the dirty work to me. Then you blame me when things aren't to your liking. I think it would be better if you stayed here and sorted things out, Hannah said quietly. Nick was hunched over his desk at Evans's and couldn't stop his eyes from straying to Joey O'Malley's back, 15 yards in front of him. Joey wasn't concentrating on his work either. He was restless, opening and closing the drawers of his desk, and looking absolutely stiff with tension. He wasn't the only one. Everybody knew Matt was reviewing the business. He'd had several long and heated sessions with Greg. Occasionally they heard raised voices. Miss Peacock typed furiously. She'd not been given so much work for a long time. Managers were going into Greg's office and coming out an hour later with stiff, serious faces. Nothing was being said to the rest of the staff, but Nick could feel the tension spiralling round the office. He'd swear there was fear, too. Everybody was waiting. There was a feeling of approaching disaster. Matt Mortimer had listened to what he had to say, and studied the figures as he'd pointed them out without saying a word. While he'd done so, Nick had studied the man's fringe of hair. It was growing thinner, almost non-existent now across the front. He knew Matt was shocked. His eyes were strained. He looked haggard and bewildered by what Nick was telling him. He made no comment at all, just dismissed him afterwards. Nick knew his suspicions were well-founded. It made him fearful, too. He felt the atmosphere was growing heavier and darker. He felt they were all waiting for the storm to break. Hugo's death had altered everything. Nick felt he couldn't impose on Hannah at a time like this, and had stayed away. Matt had come home, and the household seemed very different. Matt wasn't very welcoming where Nick was concerned. He'd had to make arrangements to meet Lizzie elsewhere. Nick sighed. Hugo's death had changed things for her, too. "It's silly," Lizzie had laughed uneasily, "but I can't think how I'll ever spend so much money." Nick was wary.
"Even Dad would consider you very rich."
"Richer than him?"
"Lizzie, Yarrow Hall Farm isn't worth anything like as much as you'll have." "I'm glad I proposed before I knew about it. At least you know I'm not marrying you for your money."
He loved her, ached for her. "I could buy a farm."
"It's your money, Lizzie. I don't want you to spend it on me."
"Once we're married, it'll be our money. It's only sensible to spend it on something you want so much. We'll have to wait 3 years, though, till I'm 21. I'll buy a big farm, and there'll be plenty left over for anything I could want."
"Lizzie."
He was overcome by her generosity, wanting to hug her for that.
"All the same, the money hasn't made things any easier."
"Of course it has."
"It's changed you already, Lizzie."
She laughed. "It hasn't changed me at all."
"You can do anything you want now."
"I still want to marry you. It hasn't changed that. It won't."
Lizzie's blue eyes sparkled up at him.
She said, "You need to think again about what you really want."
"No, Lizzie. I know exactly what I want. I want us to be married. I do love you."
"I didn't mean that."
Her laugh died.
"I want you to think again about the job with Capital Farms. I know you don't like working at Evans's, that you only decided to stay on so we could get married. I thought you were wrong then, but now, well, you won't have to support me."
Nick shivered.
He told Edmund Stanton he'd be interested in the under-manager's job, but had heard no more from him.
"That makes me uneasy, too. You don't need me as much anymore."
"I do, Nick." Lizzie was serious. She twisted his ring on her finger. "Money won't buy what you give me. Hugo was right. People have very strange ideas about money. You have."
That made him smile. "Only because I've never had enough."
Lizzie turned to him again. "Hannah told me to list the things I want, because the interest is going to be paid as soon as the will is proved. I can hardly think of anything. She says I won't be spending a fraction of my income, but then neither will she. She says I must take driving lessons and buy myself a car, and she's planning a holiday for us all. She'd like to take me to Italy, but it wouldn't suit the twins. I've been in a flat spin ever since I heard the will read. Never in my wildest dreams had I ever thought."
Nick sighed. "In a way, I wish he hadn't given you so much. It changes everything."
He ought to be glad for her. Poor Lizzie had gone without so much. All Hugo had done was to make sure she'd never go without again. "Let's go up on Thurstiston Common again," Lizzie suggested.
"It'll be cold up there."
Nick looked up at the sky. It was grey and overcast, a chilly evening for June. "We'll have it to ourselves, then. We've got to talk."
She wasn't happy with the way things were going, and blamed herself.
She'd agreed to marry Nick, but had left unfinished what she'd been trying to tell him. She had to make him understand. They had no difficulty finding the same huge rock where Nick had spread his mackintosh on the heather. Lizzie leaned against it. The breeze was fluttering at her hair. She felt wind-tossed and invigorated by the climb. Nick looked tense as he watched a solitary car travelling along the road below into West Kirby. She spread out her own coat. She'd brought an old one specially, wanting to feel Nick's arms round her. "What's the matter with us, Lizzie?"
"Two things, and we've got to sort them out."
She turned his ring gently on her finger.
"First, you won't let me tell you the truth about me and Joey."
He looked at her warily.
"Go on, then."
"We were lovers."
Nick was staring up at the scudding grey clouds. His expression didn't change.
"Do you understand? For 2 years we lived as if we were married."
He met her gaze at last.
"I got the idea the first time round," he said miserably. "Why do you have to keep on about it? I'd rather forget. It would be better if you did."
"Oh, Nick, why didn't you say? It's been bothering me. I couldn't keep it a secret from you. I wanted it said out loud."
His soft brown eyes were watching her.
"Does it make you feel better now you have?"
Lizzie shook her head. She didn't know.
"Do you mind?"
"I suppose I accepted it. I guessed, Lizzie, seeing you together."
"I love you," she said. "I'm glad it's out in the open. I feel Joey like a ghost between us, keeping us apart."
"He always has been. You were always close to Joey."
"Not anymore. It's you I love, Nick."
He put his arms round her then. His kisses were passionate. She wanted him to make love to her and scotch Joey once and for all. But Nick never quite let himself go. He felt it was the gentlemanly thing to keep control, even after what she'd told him. She didn't dare ask him in words, though it was what she wanted. Bad enough to be a girl with a past like hers.
"Joey has changed me,"
was the nearest she got to it. After all, she didn't want Nick to think she was a loose woman.
"Even now you can't forget him."
He seemed sad.
She said quietly,
"I'd like you to try to understand."
"I do, Lizzie. It was bound to happen, living the way you did.
It did feel like Joey and me against the world.
But you were so young.
15.
You were just a kid."
"So was he. Childhood is briefer in the gatehouse. Always has been."
"I suppose I knew that, too. I'm jealous of Joey. Always have been."
"Don't be. I shall put all that behind me now."
"It's not that, Lizzie. Joey's on my mind as much as yours. He's got both of us wrapped round his little finger. He worries me. I'm sure he's up to something at work. He denies it, of course, but he's such a wily fellow."
Lizzie was so appalled she couldn't move.
"I haven't seen a check in the post for the last 10 days. I don't know what good they are to him, because they'll be made out to the company, and mostly they'll be crossed. He swears it's just a fluke, but I don't know."
Horror was knifing through her. Lizzie knew without a doubt that Joey was the cause. Hadn't he sworn to bankrupt the Mortimers? Hadn't he said he would do it for her? Nick was frowning in concentration.
"That time I ran you home, and I saw that van with the toffee adverts outside his house. He was up to something then, wasn't he?"
Lizzie could feel sweat breaking out on her forehead.
"You know, Joey, he's always up to something. Always was, even back at Yarrow."
"But what is he up to now? Did he let you in on his plans?"
"No,"
she choked.
"No."
She couldn't direct that sort of attention on Joey. She couldn't betray him in that way, too. But Nick already knew.